Hey, it's Sunday. That means it is time for the AEW Collision Review here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Hello, I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. And am I going to be talking about the greatest episode of Collision to date? I'm asking this earnestly, with complete heart-on-sleeve type of situation. Was the December 16, 2023 edition of AEW Collision, hailing from Garland, Texas at the Curtis Caldwell Center, was that the greatest episode of Collision to date? Spoiler, I think it was. I don't remember another episode of Dynamite where I enjoyed myself as much as I did from top to bottom on this one here. I mean, just for giggles, okay? Let's think about some of the great collisions we've had, okay? Some that come to, you know, there was the one where, I believe it was last September, you know, that had the great Bryan Danielson, Ricky Starks main event. Then there was the FTR Bullet Club Gold, you know, 2 out of 3 falls match. That was earlier this summer. And also had CM Punk and Ricky Starks in the main event. That one was a great one too. You had Adam Cole and It was FTR versus Adam Cole and MJF, right? Which was a great main event. And then it started off with the Buddy Matthews Andrade ladder match, which was tremendous, right? Like collisions that easily pop into mind where you're like, yeah, no, but there was this great match and this great, and all of this is correct and fair. These were great matches and so on. But this specific edition of Collision, I got the alliteration going, so you know it's important what I'm about to say. This edition of Collision was top to bottom, good to great, and were borderlining excellence in some circumstances. This is one of these moments where I'm sitting there and I'm watching this stuff and I'm like, I am thoroughly I'm compelled. This is great stuff. Like from start to finish, just not only is it a breeze of a show to watch, but the action is tremendous. The squash matches have their place. Like angles are advancing, stuff is happening, but on top of it all, just tremendous action. And everyone brought their working boots and it showed and it just gave, it created, I believe, right now, this is unquestionably the greatest episode of Collision since CM Punk introduced it to us back last June. I really do. It's a bit of a meme now, the restore the feeling meme, you know, from that MJF tweet and whatnot. Now we restore. I'm going to tell you, these past couple of weeks of AEW, between Collision and Dynamite, man, it started to feel like old times. I talked about this recently. Like, when we talk about old times, just like last winter, or, at the end of 2022, and January and February 2023, I do the Dynamite reviews, and every week I'd say, we're spoiled people. We're spoiled. We're getting such great shit every week. We're spoiled. And then we got into the drought. And now, look, it's coming back. Is the feeling fully restored? Here's the thing. We all know I'm trying to say too many things at once. You all know why I'm really excited about this. If you're familiar with this nonsense I do, 3 times a week, you know why I'm excited about this, because we're getting great pro wrestling, right? Oddly enough, that's all I wanted out of my pro wrestling programming. I just want great pro wrestling, and that's what we've been getting. And this is what we've been getting thanks to the Continental Classic, right? The Continental Classic has only improved It's only become better and better as the weeks went on, as people got into it, as the guys started taking it like really seriously. And there's probably a little friendly competition going on backstage too, which is great. And as we're moving on, and we're and the tournament improves, and it takes up more and more space, and the matches are long and they're exciting. Of course, we're diminishing all the rest of the nonsense that was really distracting and turning AEW into something else. Now, once the C2 is done, this is where we're going to see just how well this feeling has been restored. Because now, do we flip back to what AEW was, you know, in September? In October, before the tournament started? Which was pretty dismal. Is that what we go back to? Because as much as I this fall produced the worst episode of Dynamite of all time, because they weren't focused on what made AEW special. Now where everything feels more streamlined. And look, I was talking about it on the Dynamite review as well. I even find that there's nonsense and there's plot holes or whatever, I even feel the devil stuff is more streamlined and focused now. I feel like everything is sort of coming back into place. Now, so basically, what I'm trying to say here is, once the C2 is done, will the feeling continue? Is AEW going to continue down this path? Stick around and find out. As Alexa Bliss once told us, let it play out. We'll see how it goes. But as it stands for tonight, look, and here, again, kind of like the review I did on Dynamite for the Garland, like I did this week. For the Dynamite review, we're going to talk about the attendance, but I don't want to spend time on it because I feel there's a lot more interesting, compelling things to talk about. And if I tell you that there was 3,108 people, tickets distributed according to WrestleTix, I'll sit here and tell you the same thing that I tell you week after week after week without any extra insight to give you. These are not good numbers. We barely made it over 3,000 distributed for Collision. It's not great. It's not, it's absolutely not good attendance. And, you know, there's no, you can spin it any which way you want. This is not good attendance. You know, here's, I said I wouldn't do it, and here we go. I've started hearing, and I think I want to repeat this because I've started hearing the ticket prices argument again. Ticket prices are too expensive. That's why people aren't going. And I couldn't disagree more. And I think the ticket price excuse is exactly that. Because if your product is hot, people are going to pay for it. Period. You know, people were looking at the floor plans for the Canadian show starting off, you know, and there's like $1,700 ticket dollars for floor tickets. Yeah, on the pre-sale, which is always that, and these are like the fucking dynamic ticket prices that Ticketmaster does, you know. Ticketmaster hikes the prices when, you know, if people go and see the map and interact with the map, and the more people interact with the ticket maps, the more the price goes up. It's like surge pricing with fucking Uber, right? It's the same thing. The more people, you know, use it, look for tickets, the more the prices go up on these dynamic pricing bullshit seats. So it doesn't matter. And here's the thing. Like, if people really wanted to go to Dynamite, they would go, or Collision, whatever, they would go, they'd pick up their tickets a couple of days before because the ticket prices drop dramatically the day before the show, the day of the show. So I don't buy it. I don't buy the ticket prices are too high, because I went to see Dynamite in Montreal for $30. That's including fees. The ticket was like $20 plus tax plus fees was like $33. I went to see AEW Dynamite for $33 and I was not in the nosebleeds. I had a nice seat, lower bowl, great view of the ring for $30. I bought my ticket the day before. So if this is where the logic of ticket prices are too high breaks down. Because if the product was really hot and people really wanted to go see it, then the arenas would fill up once the tickets hit $30. But it's not the price point that's the problem. It's the product that's the problem. It doesn't feel hot right now. Otherwise, they'd be selling out the minute the tickets hit $30. If everyone was just like, I wish I could go. Because I agree. Floor tickets, ridiculously expensive. A couple of weeks ago, I was looking at the Dynamite layout for the Montreal show, and I was like, man, $137. I don't know if I'm going to pay that. Like, I'm like, yeah, you know, with the holidays coming up and whatnot, you're like, can I afford this? Is this, but I'm going to wait. And I did. $30 tickets is what I got. $30. So I understand the thought process, but if you really want to go to an AEW show, you pick up your tickets the day before or the day of. Just as simple as that. And I'm sorry if, well, I wish I could have floor seats. You know, floor seats, ringside seats, will always be ridiculously expensive. They're going to be in the multiple hundreds of dollars, in the thousands as well. You know, I don't know if people are expecting floor seats to be like $50. Like, I don't understand what, you know, if people pull out the floor seat and they're like, oh, it's $800. Well, I'm like, yeah, well, it's expensive, but, okay. You know, people will shell out $800. Look, the fucking ringside is always full. I'm not going to pull out $800 to go sit ringside. I think ringside seats kind of suck, to be honest. I like my lower bowl seats. I think they're great. They're like, they're right on the bottom, just before you get to the floor, right there, right on the corner, John Moxley comes out in front of me. Like, it's great. That's all I want. It's fine. Especially for $30. So that's the idea. That's the point. If the price point was really a problem, then why doesn't Dynamite get sold out once the tickets drop to the $30, $40, $50 range? Away from the 100 plus, 200 plus prices. Because I'll tell you why, because the product doesn't feel hot. It's not magic. It shouldn't break your brains. I can't afford it. Okay, I understand you can't afford it. I understand. Don't worry. That's okay. I completely understand it. But, you know, your personal experience might not be the same as someone else's. And the fact is that AEW's floor seats are always fucking packed. So, you know, once you get the diehards who are willing to shell out, you know, the big bucks, and the rest of us plebs, just have to wait till the ticket prices drop. That's all. It's not all that hard to understand. So, again, can't say it enough. If the product was hotter, we wouldn't be having these discussions. And people would be buying tickets at whatever price they were, just like they did a few years ago in AEW. You know, the only exception that I see to this rule are the pay-per-views. You know, because I didn't wait last minute to get my Forbidden Door ticket for Toronto. Because Forbidden Door was... Yeah, I knew that was going to be a big deal. It was going to be a huge sellout. So I got on the presale and I bought a full price ticket. But that to me was worth it because I knew this card was going to be special and it ended up being very fucking special. And it was a tremendous time and a great trip. But Dynamites? These days, I'll wait. Now, if it ever gets really fucking hot again, maybe I won't be able to wait. Maybe once Dynamite starts selling out again, maybe I'll be like, well, and then people will be like, oh, look, when Dynamite was going to start selling out, no one is going to point to the fact that the ticket prices are low. No one is going to say that. The logic is inherently skewed because once they do start selling out and they sell out their tickets, it's not going to be because of rebates. It's not going to be because of rebates. It's not going to be because of BOGOs. It's because they're going to be. It's because people are going to be busting doors down to get their tickets, and then they're going to be. No one's going to have the "oh, tickets are too expensive" argument. Then everyone's going to say, "Oh, well, they're fairly priced." That's all I'm saying. And I said I didn't want to do a thing, but I did a thing anyway. I really didn't want to do a thing because the Continental Classic on Collision on Saturday, because I record this on Sundays. I don't know if I mentioned this. The Continental Classic on Saturday was just tremendous stuff. Absolutely tremendous stuff. Started off, of course, we're talking about the Blue League here. The second to last night of league action for the Blue League. Started off with Andrade versus Claudio. I liked here that they were establishing early that, you know, it was, that this was going to be a power match. You know, they're just like, you know, just a couple of alpha males, just like ramming into each other, bumping into each other. And I was like, yeah, let's go. This is great, you know? And it's Andrade who lands the first move of the match with a flying body press, and Claudio starts throwing uppercuts. There's a heat segment that follows. Scoop slams by Andrade. We get the giant swing by Claudio right into a sharpshooter, but Andrade reverses it into a figure four, which was really cool. And Andrade, not a complete fool. He starts removing the padding from the hook gimmicks on the turnbuckle, right? Not the turnbuckle pad itself, but removing the padding from the hooks that connect the turnbuckle to the ring post. And he's trying to do what he did to Brody, essentially, where I'm like, okay, well, that works for me. It worked one time. Why don't we do it? But it doesn't quite work out the first time, where we get a sunset bomb instead. He takes off another pad. We get a superplex by Claudio. Andrade holds on after the superplex and goes for the Three Amigos to a big reaction from the crowd, which is fine, you know. I myself as well, I'm like, you know, we could pump the brakes on the Eddie Guerrero tribute spots, but you're in Texas, do an Eddie spot, and it got a huge reaction, of course. The third of the Amigos is interrupted to tremendous boos from the crowd. By the way, these Texas crowds, Wednesday and tonight, or Saturday, I should say, tremendous audiences. Just absolutely tremendous audiences. They were into this. There's some back and forth. They go back to the top to, you know, one of the corners that have been that where the padding was removed. Claudio he crotches Andrade off the top, and Andrade lands on the steel, the exposed steel. So, you know, he sells that his hamstring is hurt. So the referee goes to put the padding back on the hook thing. Claudio, he's no fool, sees the referee's back is turned, goes for the shortcut and low blows Andrade, then lands the neutralizer as the ref turns around, gets the win, gets his 6 points, and Andrade stays at 9. I gave this four stars flat. I thought this was great. Let's keep going. As we usually do, I forgot to mention this because I'm so excited. Yes. We're going through the Continental Classic. We're doing that bit of the coverage, and then we'll do the rest of the show as we go along. But first, we're going to but we're going to talk about the Continental Classic first. It's what I've been doing on the reviews over the past couple of weeks, both on the Dynamite and Collision reviews. So we're sticking to that formula. I kind of like it. And then if you just want to hear about the Collision, the Continental Classic, you can hit the bricks. And you're like, thank you, Warren. That's all you need to know. And if you want to listen to the rest, well, you can as well. I kind of actually appreciate it if you do. Then a little later on in the evening, we had Eddie Kingston defeating Daniel Garcia. And I thought this was tremendous again. Another fucking great fight here. And Garcia, you know, he's going for the leg. He's using his smarts here. He's trying to work Eddie's legs with dragon screws and does a dragon screw off the apron, which was a fantastic spot. Eddie gets a control segment, does the machine gun chops in the corner, but Garcia starts to hulk up and he's like, no, do it again. You know, there's even a reversal where Garcia then just pounds Eddie down into the corner, and it's great stuff. Eddie gets an exploder. He lands a back fist, covers. Garcia kicks out. Back suplex by Garcia. Eddie Kingston starts, you know, revs up to go after him, probably with the lariat or something, but his leg gives out, and Garcia sort of looks at him, and he goes straight in for the kill, goes right for the legs again. Eddie fights out, there's some strikes. Garcia, dropkick to the knee, but Eddie fights back with a half and half, lands the back fist again. He gets his another 3 points. He's back up to six. Goose egg for Garcia. I feel there was some confusion on commentary tonight that we're talking about how Garcia, you know, oh, he absolutely needed this win. Garcia was eliminated last week with his loss to Danielson. That sealed the deal. He was mathematically gone from the tournament. There was no way he could win it. So at this point, all the best he can hope for is to be a spoiler and maybe get 3 points on the board. But Eddie, still alive. We'll talk about the breakdown in a second. And the main event, and my God, what a main event. Danielson defeated Brody King. Look, honestly, I was at this point, I was like, if there's one match at this point that's going to go to a draw, it's this one, right? I thought it was going to be Merks and Swocks. Mox and Swerve. I thought that's the match that was going to go to a draw, but they didn't. And I thought this one was going to go to a draw, and they didn't. And what a... I believe this match to be the match of the tournament. I think this was it. Danielson and Brody just like... a fantastic fight. You know, that felt violent and real. And two guys, you know that they have to score these 3 points because they're both tied. They want to get into the lead. There's a whole mess of guys right now. We're nipping at each other's heels. And they just want to get a leg up on the... This is fantastic. And Brody played the part. Danielson at first. He's playing it smart. And he's going for the hamstrings. He's kicking. He's bobbing and weaving. Smart thing to do, right? You take the big base out of the guy. The base out of the big guy. But, of course, Brody King fights back. Gets the cannonball sent on in the corner. And he beats up Danielson on the floor. And Danielson has a hell of a time trying to recover from this. And he's bleeding from the orbital, like from the tape. And of course, Brody King goes for it. He saw... See, this is the thing. This is what I tell you guys, gals, and non-binary pals when I say... When I tell you, tournaments like this, sports-based presentation has stories. You can have stories. It's not goofball... fucking, you know, vignettes and bullshit like that. Look at the story that was told here. Brody King saw Andrade use the orbital injury to his advantage. So what did he do? He went after it as well, which is a very correct thing to do. Garcia didn't do it in his match and he fucking lost. Now this, so Andrade does it. Brody King's like, I'm fucking doing it. If this is his Achilles heel, I need everything that I can pull together to beat Bryan Danielson because he's one of the fucking greatest to ever do it. So, let's go. And he was tearing at it, pummeling it, face washing it, driving his cast into it. Fuck yes! I mean, what? And Danielson's eye looked like shit. It was closed up. It was terrible. And I'm like, but I'm sitting there at the same time and it's like, Bryan Danielson's a fucking lunatic. You know, when he says, you know, my wife tells me I love this more than, you know, than I probably should. I believe Bree sits down with him and says, you know, Brian, I think you might love this more than you love your own family. And I fucking believe it. This guy lives and breathes professional wrestling. And when you see this kind of stuff from Danielson, you're like, this guy is psychotic. He is nuts. He's a once in a lifetime guy. This is tremendous stuff. And Brody was... And the thing is that Brody is so credible in this position. He's huge. He's fearsome. The tattoos. You just look at the guy and say, yes. And I'm sitting there and I've got... And both of my forearms are draped over my head. And I'm enjoying every second of this. And then Danielson eventually fights back. Gets a single crab. He picks King down with a series of just relentless kicks at some point, right? But then But then Brody, out of nowhere, he lands a fucking Death Valley driver. And I'm like, fucking hell. Busaikuni follows by Danielson. Covers. King kicks out at one. The crowd is unglued. I'm out of my seat, brother. More kicks by Danielson. A huge lariat by King that just decapitates the man. And it takes three Busaikunis, including one to the back of the head, to get the job done. Tremendous stuff. 4 3/4 stars from your boy Warren Hayes. Match of the tournament. This was outstanding. Danielson absolutely understood the mandate of this tournament because he has been stellar throughout. No surprise. Look, I've said this before, but this is a good opportunity to say it one more time. Just, I sincerely believe Bryan Danielson to be the greatest professional wrestler North America has ever produced. Bar none. There is, even in this state, even in the late state of his career, where his body is literally falling apart, you know, when Nigel calls him, you know, Brittle Danielson, you believe it. You know what he's talking about. Even there, this guy is dealing, he is shoveling out top tier matches all the time. And then in a couple of weeks, in 2-3 weeks time, he's flying to Japan to fight in the fucking Tokyo Dome against another one of the greatest of all time. Like, what are we even doing here? It's tremendous stuff. I really do believe Bryan Danielson is the greatest North American wrestler to ever do it. And it's in performances like this that I'm like, absolutely. And he brings this out of people too. And this has always been his thing. You know, and Ricky Starks talked about it as well when they had their tremendous strap match. It's the same thing. Danielson brings the greatness out of people as well. There's no one who will have ever done it as astoundingly great. Even when neutered in WWE, he still managed to rise above, to wrestle like no one else on that fucking roster. We're privileged to be seeing this. To be seeing this guy who says, this is my last year as a full-time pro wrestler. We're privileged. And he is going to leave his full-time career giving us these tremendous memories. What a fucking legacy this is. Great stuff. So, where does that leave us in the Gold League, right? What's left? Andrade El Idolo and Bryan Danielson are at the top with 9 points each, both with 3-1-0, excuse me. Brody King, 2-2, 6 points. Claudio Castagnoli as well, 6 points, 2-2. Eddie Kingston, 6 points, 2-2. Dan Garcia, still with no points on the board, 0-4-0. So, now, the Blue League is in a very interesting position right now because there are a lot of guys who are nipping at the heels of other guys here. So we're very close. Everyone is very close to each other, but everyone needs a little bit of everyone else's help to move forward. And this is what's left, okay? So next week, we've got three final matches left. We have Bryan Danielson versus Claudio. We've got Brody King versus Dan Garcia. And we have Eddie Kingston versus Andrade. Now, the one I believe you need to look out for, and if I'm booking this, this is going to be my main event on Saturday, is Andrade versus Eddie. And I'll tell you why. Danielson, if Danielson beats Claudio, he immediately goes to the semis. And I'm glad they're clarifying all of this. There is semis. We still don't know if the semis are going to be gold winner versus blue runner-up and blue winner versus gold runner-up, or if they're going to be semifinals within the league, the top two guys. I don't know yet. Because there is the potential for a five-way tie, but they're not going to do it. There's no potential really for a five-way tie. What are you talking about, Warren? But there is a potential for you know, a goofy wackadoo scenario where a lot of guys have are tied up. But here's the thing. Danielson, if he beats Claudio, which I think he will, he'll be at 12 points. That means he punches his clock. He punches his ticket, I should say. He can punch his clock if he wants to. And he wins the block, right? Now, if Andrade beats Eddie, he gets 12 points. And he wins the block. And this can absolutely happen. Now, the difference here, so both guys can, both Danielson and Andrade potentially can end with 12 points. The difference here is that Andrade will win the block because he holds the tiebreaker over Danielson, which is fine. So, but still Danielson at 9 points will have a very, at 9 points, let me see here. See, if Danielson has 9 points, that means he loses against Claudio, which would mean Claudio would move forward because he would be at 9 points, and then Danielson, and then he holds the tiebreaker over Danielson. So if Danielson loses, Claudio can come in at second place at 9 points, and he'll move forward. That is, of course, unless Brody King gets his win, which will make him go up to 9 points. But then again, he won against Claudio, but he lost against Danielson. See, we're getting into wackadoo territory here, you know, and we can come up with all these types of scenarios where it's like, well, this and that and that and this. See, this is what I mean, is that there's a lot of situations here where people need help to move forward, right? If I'm booking this and I'm keeping it at its simplest form, right? I absolutely would have either Danielson or I would have Danielson go forward. I think Danielson wins the block. I think he wins against Claudio. It'll be a good fight. He'll finish with a clear winner at 12 points. Brody Garcia, I have Garcia spoil the tournament for Brody, right? Because the question that everyone always asks me, because I get DMs about it, because, you know, the round robin thing is new to people. I cover the G1, so these round robin scenarios and bullshit like that, that's fine. I can work through this. So they often ask me, the question I get asked the most, and I even get sometimes on Blue Sky too, what about Eddie? Will Eddie win? This has been a theme. Everyone loves fucking Eddie Kingston, right? So, and I don't mean that pejoratively. I love Eddie Kingston as well. If Danielson wins, he wins the block, right? So the only way, and even if he loses, even if Danielson is at 9 points, the minute that Danielson is at 9 points, it means that Eddie does not win the block, okay? Because Danielson has the win, Danielson has the tiebreaker, and Brody King has the tiebreaker over Eddie. So Brody has to stay at 6 points for Eddie to have a chance as well. Garcia has to defeat Brody King so that Eddie Kingston will have a chance to advance. Keep that in mind next week as you're watching Collision. So if Garcia spoils King's tournament, Eddie is still alive. What Eddie has to do is beat Andrade. He has to, and I think that's what I do. If he beats Andrade and Danielson wins, Eddie is the clear number two and he goes to the playoffs, to the semis. That's what people want, right? They want him to qualify. That's how he'll qualify. For Eddie to be runner-up in the block, Danielson needs to beat Claudio, not only to get the 12 points, but also to make sure that Claudio stays at 6 points. That's a thing. But it's mostly for Danielson to get the 12 points. And Garcia has to beat Brody King. Because if Brody King is at 9 points and Eddie defeats Andrade, Brody is still the guy who's going to move forward. And in fact, there'll be a three-way tie, and they're not going to do a three-way tie. They're not going to do that. Not in the first year. They're going to keep it as simple as possible. But that's what has to happen. Danielson has to win. Brody has to lose. And Garcia and Kingston, of course, has to beat Andrade. That's what has to happen. Because Andrade and Eddie will be tied at 9, but Eddie will have the tiebreaker. So I think they're going to keep it simple. I think they're going to keep it very, very fucking simple. We can come up with the, you know, like I said, the wackadoo scenarios, like I like to call them. But there's no point. There's no point trying to break it down any weirder than that. Now, let's say Andrade beats, Eddie. Like, the other possibility that could be very, very possible is Danielson versus Andrade. Again, Danielson just has to, you know, he has to beat Claudio, bring him up to 12 points. And if Andrade beats Eddie, that'll bring him up to 12 points. And, you know, who cares? These are the top two in the block. I mean, Andrade has the tiebreaker, so he will officially win the block, but they will both go to the semis. So, you know, Claudio was kind of soft eliminated from this one. He's kind of soft eliminated. So is Brody, but, you know, Eddie is really the guy who has the biggest chance to come out on top because, look, there's so many, there's still patterns here. It's a tentacle of stuff right now. But we're gonna skip over the wackadoo stuff. This is where we're at right now. It's going to be tremendous next week. I'm excited to see. I mean, I'm excited to see. You know what? I'm excited to see how the ratings fared this week. You know, we don't talk about ratings all that much here on the show because I feel there's better people who do it in a much more informed way than I do, who are out there and who cover the ratings in a compelling way that make a lot of sense. So, you know, I'm not your go-to source for this. But it was interesting to note that last week, Collision was head-to-head with an NXT PLE. And where historically, WWE PLEs take a huge chunk out of the Collision viewership, last week we barely saw a blip. As if the Continental Classic is drawing. So I'm very excited to see how this week's tournament, how this week's Collision fared, especially without a PLE. And then next week's on top of that, once we're getting into the nitty gritty of the tournament. I think my hypothesis is this, and I will verify this hypothesis sooner than you think. But my hypothesis is that the more the tournament went on and the more people started hearing about it, understanding the concept of the round robin and seeing the quality of the matches, the more the tournament went on, the more people got invested in it and people started tuning in to watch it. Because we have data from the quarter hours and so on and so forth. This is my working theory, but I will do a wrap-up of this. I promise. I will do a complete wrap-up and we'll walk through everything here. Once the tournament is over. Once World's End is kaput. So that's where we're at for the Continental Classic. That's what we have next week for the Blue League. One last night of league action. And it's all on the line. It's tremendous. Folks, tournament wrestling, when it's done well, is the greatest thing on earth. It's so good. And this has been great. The guys have been delivering. Slow to take off, but Jesus, we're flying now. Let's talk about the rest of the show now, shall we? So, the show started off like we talked about Claudio versus Andrade. Then they did a recap of Gold League action. And the first match that we got was after that was a squash. Abaddon defeating Jasmine Allure, which was fine. It's a squash. You know, Abaddon getting some good reactions. Whatever they're doing with her right now is working. It's connecting with the audience. Anyway, Texas was into it. After the match, the lights go out. Julia Hart pops in, drops the belt at her feet, and they start fighting. And then Sky Blue appears. You know, she shows up, and for some reason, you're like, oh, on which side is she? But she's like, she's a mopey. She's a mopey now. So she's going to be with Julia. I don't know. Anyway, she attacks Abaddon. It doesn't matter. Anyway, all of this Julia Hart, Sky Blue shit. Like, I thought Sky Blue had renounced Julia Hart. I thought she had, what, right? Didn't we see that at the fucking three-way at Full Gear where Sky Blue was? Who cares? See, these are the types of stories that I'm like, wait, this doesn't make sense. And that's what happens when you try to do too much story, you know, and ciliary stuff, and instead of focusing on, you know, doing things that make sense in the ring. Anyway. But it just so happened that Thunder Rosa, who was on Spanish commentary, ran in to help out Abaddon here. First bit of action in the ring for over 16 months with a back injury. It's good to see her. She looked good. She looked happy to be there. She's going to be in action on Dynamite this week in a tag team match. I think it's good. Let her ease in like that. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, look, she was announced in the Collision roster, wasn't she? She was part of, you know, Phil Brooks's Malcontents, right? She was on the Malcontent show. No, but seriously, I'm glad to see her back. That's the kind of thing you don't wish severe injuries on pro wrestlers. Let's all have long, healthy careers. I'm glad she's back. Be excited to see her back in action as well. Got a big reaction from the crowd as well. I think at first people didn't realize who she was, but then when the cameras sort of settled and started showing her face, like on the Tonytron, you know, because you get the live feed, right, when you're in the arenas. And it was like, oh shit, it's Thunder Rosa. Then people started getting excited. But at first, I really think people didn't know who she was. You know, she has the blonde hair. It's very long, so on and so forth. Anyway. Renee Paquette then is backstage with the Acclaimed, and they're pissed off. Max Caster says he doesn't want to be MJF's friend anymore because he puts them in danger and he doesn't care. And then Top Flight and Action Andretti arrive to challenge them for a trios match. And that's going to happen next week on Collision. Cool. I have not watched the Rampage match between those three and Penta, Commander, and who was it, Vikingo? Apparently that was a hoot and a holler. I'll probably do that after I'm done recording this. Then we had the AEW International title match where Orange Cassidy defeated Brian Keith. Big hometown reaction for Brian Keith, who looked like a star and came across as a star, of course. But that's what you do in the hometowns. You bring out these people and you try them out and they look like big deals. And this was a good little match that we had here. And so many people, like, again, I'm seeing the reactions like, who cares? What is this? Why did he do to, what did he do to deserve this? Orange Cassidy is basically a walking open challenge, right? He's just like, yeah, sure, you want a shot at this? And this has been his thing for ever with this title. And this is very reminiscent to me of Cody's run with the TNT title when you'd bring in, you know, people unsigned to the company to challenge, like Eddie Kingston, like Warhorse, like Ricky Starks, and a lot of these guys got jobs off of that as well. I mean, I don't see what the issue is. People will nitpick everything. Now, if anyone wants to nitpick the idea of why are they bringing in people to challenge for titles when there are so many people on the roster that aren't doing anything, you know, and are basically forgotten. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's something that makes sense to me to discuss. But if it's just like, who cares? Who's this guy? What's the issue? Yeah, I hand wave those discussions now. It's not interesting. It's not interesting, and this is much more interesting. I dig this a lot more. And good for Brian Keith here, who really takes it to Orange Cassidy, hitting him hard, not really being taken aback by the goofiness. Orange Cassidy fights back with a tornado DDT and a dive. Avalanche Northern Light suplex by King. He also eats a beach break. Orange Cassidy does the kicks. I like how the soft kicks have now evolved into, they start off soft, but then they become real kicks. I like that. Tremendous flipping DDT by King, Keith. I call him King, right? Brian Keith, off the top rope. And Orange Cassidy has to put this one away with the mousetrap, which is, you know, one of his multiple go-tos, but one that he pulls out when he knows he's in trouble. So there you go. Good match. Good win. You know, they brought Keith in to work Ring of Honor as well on Friday. Tony Khan licensed his indie music as well. If it looks like a signing and it smells like a signing and it tastes like a signing, brother. Because, look, we know from the past that there is talent that gets signed by AEW, but who doesn't get announced just yet. So I'm not saying, I have no information on this. I'm not trying to, you know, lay down some breadcrumbs or whatever. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. But the way Tony Khan is acting with Brian Keith these days, kind of feels like he's signed. If he's not signed, I think he really likes him. At bare minimum, the boss really likes him. Now again, we can have a very compelling discussion as to whether or not Brian Keith will be lost in the shuffle. There are already tons of guys who don't get airtime, so on. We can absolutely have that discussion. But this, to me, bringing in a guy like Brian Keith, who has a very unique look, who has a great style of wrestling that I feel AEW fans really enjoy. He's a tremendous charisma, like a great presentation. He looks like a goddamn star, you know. To me, there's a lot more value in hiring a guy like him than a guy like John Morrison, for instance. Tons more upside. You know, pick your favorite, what is this AEW signing guy? Pick your favorite. You know, you can still make that argument that Brian Keith has a lot more upside. But I can see the other side of the argument as well, where it's like, well, what are the chances he's going to get lost? Who else is going to get lost that might be up? You know, where's Scorpio Sky? All that stuff. And I get it. But, you know, Scorpio Sky, good example. Pound for pound, you put these two guys, you know, in front of me. I'm starting up my promotion. I'm bringing in Brian Keith. Scorp has had opportunities and chances, and it's just not working. It's, you know, it's fine. He's, yeah. Whereas Brian Keith, I feel, has a much higher ceiling. I feel it's a lot more palpable what you can do with him. Anyway, let's keep moving here. Commentary mentioned also that that on December 16 was the birthday of Brody Lee. So a nice little underscore here to the memory of the great Brody Lee. Then we get a Miro pre-tape where he talks about CJ and Andrade. I don't know. Look, this is what I've been telling you week after week with the Miro stuff. Ever since CJ has been in the environment, I think he's less interesting. I think it's taken an edge away. I don't think it's good. I don't care. I don't care as much about Miro as I did. It kind of stinks. Lexi Nair is backstage with Commander, coming off a win at Final Battle. Roderick Strong arrives to challenge him to a match. And I mean, look, Roderick Strong's match with Adam Page Wednesday on Dynamite, absolutely phenomenal stuff. And I hope I have always, maybe I haven't always been clear about this, you know, on the Dynamite side of things, is that I don't hate Roderick Strong. Roderick Strong will always be an underappreciated, high-level talent, a tremendous pro wrestler. And I have never taken that away from him. But this nonsense with the wheelchair and the neck brace and the Adam and the scorned girlfriend gimmick, whatever the hell he's doing, I don't think it's good. But aside from that, you're telling me Commander and Roderick Strong on, what is it, on Dynamite or whatever? I'm going to watch it. I'm excited for it. I mean, this should rule. It'll rule. Again, give the luchadors wins on television once in a while. Once in ever. But the spirit of Monday Nitro lives on. FTR come to the ring. Now, this was, in my opinion, the low point of the show. Which is not bad. Because it wasn't a bad segment. You know, it wasn't as bad as Kenny and Jericho and Ricky and Big Bill on Wednesday. That was bad. This was not bad. But it wasn't, I feel like if there's one thing that stuck out from the rest of this great show as, oh, this didn't quite work as well, it's this. It's everything else connected, everything else worked. This was, and again, I'm not saying it was bad because it wasn't bad. It was just a little off. It was good, pretty good, good, it's fine. I'm not going to sit here and trash it, but it's, you know, I just want, this was the low point, so not a bad show. We're doing, this is good, this is a good omen here. So they get to the ring, FTR do Cash and Dax, and they call out the House of Black, and they say Malachi and Buddy are mad that Brody is having success in the C2 and that Julia has a championship, and they're like, oh, we're just jealous, you know, they're divide and conquer. Well, then and Dax says, you know, oh, the, you know, he talks about, oh, I see what people say about us online, about our body types and us being overrated and that we're difficult to work with. And then, well, we know, you know, Dax, you are a very online pro wrestler. We know you see all of this. Don't worry. You don't have to tell us. We already know. We know by how you react. We know via your boo-boo face that you are fully aware of what people say about you online. And then Malachi and Buddy appear on the Tonytron. It's all spooky and they burn a picture of Dax's family. Like, you know, all things are, I'm like, okay, sure. I mean, this should be a hell of a fun match. That's the thing. Like, ultimately, I'm like, this match is going to be a hell of a lot of, it's going to be a hell of a good time. We're taking some methods to get there. You know, they're doing divide and conquer. You know, they're saying Cash, you know, everyone likes Dax, but what about you? You know, they're doing divide and conquer strategies. Both of them are. Anyway, we get a recap of Keith Lee's win over Shane Taylor over at the Final Battle. And it includes Keith telling Lexi Nair, I believe, that Shane Taylor was not him, right? He was like, who's him? Let's skip. Well, no, we'll wait. We won't have to skip. Then we get the tag team Texas Street Fight, where Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale, dressed as Vincent Vega and fucking Jules. What's his name? Pulp Fiction is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I can't remember Samuel L. Jackson's character's name. That's kind of depressing. Jules? Don't remember. Don't have a live chat to save me here. Yeah, they're dressed up. They even have the briefcase and everything, and you know, looking good, ladies. What a fun plunder match this was. This was a blast. I had a tremendous time watching this match, and you know, Willow, you know, gets busted open, and so does Diamante, and she gets plastered across the stairs at some point, like, and it looked really rough. Good, you know, hell of a bump there. Mercedes eats a ladder shot too. Like, they were working hard. Spider German by Martinez on the chairs as well, which was a fantastic spot. And they're throwing themselves into stuff, and there's props to them, right? Props to Willow and Diamante here, because they have like a board set up in the corner, and it's like spray painted and whatnot. Like, it looks like a plywood board. I don't know. Like, it didn't look like it was all that, you know, resistant. But they set it up in the corner in the angle so that Willow can do the pounce and send Diamante flying through it. Well, they do the pounce, but the board doesn't break. So Willow, being the pro that she is, scoops up Diamante and then dumps her onto the board. The board doesn't fucking break. So Willow's like, we're breaking this fucking board. And she grabs it and she cracks it across Diamante's back while she's on the floor. The board doesn't fucking break. But Willow, like, then she wails on it on the mat, and she finally gets it to snap. But that was fun. It was, I mean, the everyone was trying to break the fucking thing, and it just didn't happen. They opened up the briefcase that was brought to the ring by the babyfaces. It's full of tacks and glass. Diamante sunset bombs Chris Statlander onto it. We get Willow Nightingale gets powerbombed off the apron through a table on the floor. Another tremendous bump. And but Chris Statlander clocks Diamante across the head with a chain for the win. I gave this 3.75 stars. I thought this was a blast and a half. Everyone worked their asses off here. It was fun as hell. As far as plunder matches go, look, and you're not... as far as plunder matches go, this was energetic. There was always stuff happening. There were no long pauses. Everything made sense. Great fucking spots. You know, you can have your Cora Jade, Roxanne Perez Weapons Wild matches at the other place. Give me this. This is tremendous. People who work and who work hard, and they're not just like pretending to be hardcore or to be in a match. These women were in a match. This was tremendous. This was great stuff, actually. Renee Paquette is backstage with Timeless Toni Storm and Maria May. They talk about stuff. Saraya and Rio are having a number one contenders match this week, and Toni Storm talks about tits and shoes. They're gonna slap the tits off of each other, and they'll be titless, I think, I believe, is what she said. And Renee was just delightful in this segment. Let's keep moving. And there's still there's Mariah May bullshit in here. Who cares? Adam Copeland has a pre-tape where he talks about how his match with Christian Cage has reignited his lust for gold. So he's coming for the rematch, a no disqualifications match at World's End. It's good shit, pal. Then we had Brian Cage squashing Kari Wright. Well, he was very wrong on Saturday. It's got trounced by our boy here. You know, and I popped in the Discord, and I was looking at this, and I'm like, Brian Cage, look, Brian Cage comes in, squashes a dude, right? Who's the other guy who comes in and squashes diseases? It's Wardlow. And you know, two big guys, two big athletic guys that can do amazing shit, and I'm like, Brian Cage is just better than Wardlow, like, on pretty much every level, isn't he? Brian Cage is superior to Wardlow on just about every metric that counts. You know, well, Wardlow is athletic and he does, you know, swantons. Look at the shit that Brian Cage does. Look at how fast and quick he was going through moves. Like, he has speed. Wardlow doesn't have this explosiveness that Cage does. You know, here's... I know for multiple reasons, you know, there's a lot of people who don't like Brian Cage, and I get it, and I know why, and if you can't look past that, that's fine, you know, but I can't be sitting here and analyzing a pro wrestler if we didn't break this down here, outside of whatever he feels about vaccinations or whatever the fuck. You know, this is a guy that I've seen live, okay? Like, right in front of my eyes, right in front of me, and I think... this is a guy that television does injustice to. Until you see the mass of humanity that is Brian Cage, I don't think it sinks into your head just how huge and tremendous this guy is. And then when he's working like a fucking lucha libre dude, when he's doing these snappy little moves, and he's doing... Look, Tope Con Hilos. It's a move you see on every wrestling show these days, right? Guys throwing themselves over the top rope in a flip, right? Brian Cage did it. It was at a Warrior show a couple of years ago. And I was right there. And he does it, and I popped out of my seat for a fucking Tope Con Hilos. But the man should not be doing that kind of thing. He's too big. But he does it, and he does it with ease. And I'm looking at that. And I'm looking at him, you know, just spin the dude around into the drill claw. And you don't see the drill claw coming. And he's not setting it up and doing a, well, let's go, and doing like hand gestures. He's just like, no, I'm here to destroy dudes. And look at it. And he's got more charisma. He's able to cut a promo better. He's got all the upsides that Wardlow has. Doesn't have, I should say. I'm not saying dump Wardlow, forget about him, but it's wild when I look at Brian Cage. And again, I know he doesn't incur the favor of the internet wrestling community, and I shouldn't say that because there's no such thing as an internet wrestling community anymore. It's just people online talking about wrestling. But the wrestling fans online, how about that? They have issues with Brian Cage, so it's not cool to shower him with praise, right? But I think if he was one of the favorites, I think this guy's trajectory would be entirely different. You know, everyone thought he was getting fired earlier this year, and look at this. He's on Collision and he's having squashes. They're setting shit up for him. Trios, championships, and frankly, I don't get it. Frankly, I don't. I have trouble understanding just why this guy gets disregarded so much when he has so much upside. This is a guy, when he was in Impact, people were saying he's being held back in Impact. Get him out of there. Let him do things. Then he goes off and he does things, and people are like, look at this roid maniac. I'm not saying he's... What I'm saying is, as a professional wrestler, look at this guy go. He's tremendous. He's... big man, can do everything. Everything and then some. Because he does... Anyway. There's my Brian Cage rant. This was a tremendous squash. He looked fantastic. He looked absolutely fantastic. Anyway. After this, Lexi Nair is chatting with... she's backstage with Prince Nana and Cage and the Gates of Agony. And they're all putting themselves over. And then Nana puts Swerve's C2 over as well. Which brings in Keith Lee. Where he's like, hey... you better tell him that time is running out. So him, as a lot of us suspected, was Swerve Strickland. A lot of us is suspecting that's what it was going to be. And a lot of us are not necessarily excited at this prospect. I honestly thought that the that the Keith Lee, Swerve Strickland stuff was just like buried, done, that we weren't going to touch this again. You know, they tried to reignite it a couple of times and it wasn't working out. I don't need finality on this. I really don't. And I don't even remember why they hate each other anymore. It's because of the cinder block thing, right? Because, right? I guess. So I'm already a little... And this is not a knock on Keith Lee, the man. This is a knock on Keith Lee, how he's been booked. Keith Lee doesn't feel like Keith Lee used to. You know what I mean? So, and it's not a knock on him specifically, but at this stage, especially since they haven't been really doing anything, they tried to do a tag team with Keith Lee and Dustin Rhodes, and so what are we doing? What is this stuff? What's going on? It does, you know, and it's not great, and it's very lower card bullshit. Now they're heating up Keith again, but I'm still not convinced, and it's to heat him up to be an opponent for Swerve once Swerve is done with the C2, but I don't want Swerve to go back to Keith Lee. Swerve needs to stay in the circle of top guys that he's in right now. He's mixing it up with the Moxes and the Adam Pages, and that's who he has to stay around because they're elevating him. And quite frankly, where Keith Lee is right now on the pecking order, on the card, it's going to feel like a demotion for Swerve. Unless Swerve handily dispatches of him. But if this turns into a multi-month program, we're doing a tremendous disservice to Swerve Strickland if this is what we're doing. I can't say I'm super excited about it. You know, people are like, oh, you know, he shouldn't win the C2. I think he should win the C2. I think he should be he should have this big new singles gold thing and continue on this push. Because don't forget this, he is in a push. This is a legitimate true to form push that he's in. Let's continue that momentum. I think he should win the C2 and then drop the triple crown at some point and then fucking win the title, the world championship. I think this is a trigger that needs to be pulled, and they're doing it great. So if he wins the triple crown, and there's no real way to see this as a good thing for Swerve. Either way, whether he's GHC. No, what do they call it? The Triple Crown. GHC's the other guys. If he's the Triple Crown champion, and he loses to Keith Lee, right? If he becomes a Triple Crown champion, and then his next program is against Keith Lee. Either way, he's punching below his station at this point, and I don't think it's a good thing. Swerve is creating credibility as a top guy, and it's kind of like what they did with Orange, where Orange Cassidy is back on the mid-card doing mid-card things. He's very good at it, don't get me wrong. He's still a tremendous wrestler. But this elevation, I don't feel it. I don't see it. It's all very weird. I can't say I'm excited for this. Then we got the Eddie Kingston and Daniel Garcia match, and then Danielson versus Brody King, which we've already talked about. So that is going to wrap it up for today's review of AEW Collision. Thank you all for listening, watching. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, consider giving a like and a subscription if it's the first time you're here. There's a lot more of this coming over the next few weeks. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, well, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, 5-star ratings on Spotify, anything that you can do to show us a little bit of love would be tremendous. I, of course, will be back on Tuesday for the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper, back on Thursday for the Dynamite review, and so on and so forth. And yeah, I don't think I'll be slowing down during the holidays, folks. Au contraire, we're going to ramp it up. Okay, sure, whatever you say, Warren. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend, and I will see you next time.